powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Welcome to the Bump and Stacey Show. Curtis and I are back at it again one more time before he leaves us.
Wow. I'm not going anywhere.
Well, but, I didn't yeah. say no longer be with us.
I appreciate you for using some discretion there, because normally, yeah, it sounds like, you know, everybody's just dying around you when you're telling people they're going away for a while.
That was my mid-year resolution, was to get better at that. You know what I'm saying? But Curtis is going to have a baby tomorrow, so this is like his goodbye for a few weeks. And why not do it here at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center? Because we are here for mini camp, man.
We heard it was mandatory, so we showed up. okay, I guess we got no choice but to be here for mini camp, at least the start of it.
As we used to say back in the day, it's Mando. It's mandatory. Yeah, mandatory.
You gotta, I like that.
You got to get here. So
Mando,
Shetty,
Yoffs.
This is what we do. So we're here at minicamp, man. And when I think about minicamp, I go back to the days when I was in. And there's two different minicamps. And I'm not talking rookie minicamp. I'm not talking voluntary. I'm not talking mandatory. I'm talking about the differences between a guy like Geno Smith, who just signed a deal, three-year deal, what, $75 million, 25 guaranteed. Guys like Jamal Adams signed a big deal a few years ago. And then guys like Jake Bobo trying to make the team. Or even a guy like Devin Witherspoon, first year in this organization, just seeing what it's about, what it's all about to be an NFL pro. And I think about the stress that's put on the younger guys. Now, there's young guys like Devin Witherspoon who he knows he's going to play, but there's still some stress out there. You're learning the new players. You're in a new environment. You have new teammates, but you know you're going to play. And then there are guys who are trying to make the team or who are on the bubble. Say like a guy like D. Eskridge, who says, look, I've been here a couple years. I haven't done much. I have to prove or add value to myself by performing here. And the guys like Jake Bobo who are like, all right, every opportunity I get, I have to be on point. So there's nothing but stress out there, but there's different levels of stress.
Yeah, if you are on the roster bubble, and we're going to talk about this later today, I believe at 11 a.m., just kind of the lasting impression these guys want to leave on the coaching staff before they head out for summer, before, you know, they get this month and a half off, before training camp rolls around. Like, this is your last opportunity to kind of leave a good impression on this coaching staff and leave them thinking like, oh, that's somebody that I need to be watching for at training camp to see if they have a shot at making this roster or to see if they have a shot at winning a starting job. And there are plenty of starting jobs, I think, still up for grabs on the offensive line. I think there's some spots in the secondary as well, linebacker maybe, two defensive line as well. So that's a great thing that the Seahawks have kind of brought back over the last few years is that competition, is guys not heading into a season kind of assuming that they've got the starting job locked up. I think that's going to be very beneficial for a lot of guys on this roster, saying like, hey, I earned this spot. I showed this coaching staff that I was deserving of this, rather than somebody just kind of assuming that role based off of, you know, the contract that they have, or they were maybe the starter the year prior.
And if you are a coach, you're evaluating guys, you're seeing who can do what, how can you put them in great position. But, man, most importantly, you want to make sure these guys get out healthy, especially the guys that you know that you are going to rely on. Cut number one, Pete talks about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm looking for a jump to hope everybody gets back. You know, we all get back, and you know, we're hoping that they'll be able to find a really good rhythm and routine for their workout so that the conditioning is not an issue. It's not like they'll be out of shape, but will they be in shape enough to handle the workload so that they can stay healthy? That's really the concern. There's a, you know, the first 2 weeks of camp are really a demanding time for them, and if they haven't worked, then they can get vulnerable. You know, after the first week, they get a few practices under their belt, and then all of a sudden they start feeling a little soreness here and there, and they get susceptible. And so that's what we're worried about.
Yeah, and if there's one thing Pete does not like is when guys come in out of shape. And typically when guys are out of shape, you start seeing the hamstring pulls a little bit, tweaking this, tweaking that. Now, not to say that guys come in and they're in great shape and they don't get hurt, but the chances of you getting hurt with stuff like that are higher when you aren't in shape. So this is where you become a professional too. Can you get in a mini camp, perform, leave a good impression, leave, come back, in shape, ready to go. That's also part of learning how to become a pro.
Yeah, these guys are going to be left to their own devices over the next month, month and a half. And I've always kind of noticed that over the course of the next month is when you see some of the craziest NFL headlines of the entire season. Because guys are not under the watchful eye of their organizations. They're just kind of back home doing whatever it is that they want to do. It's their last chance to, you know, catch their breath before the grind of the season starts when training camp opens up in late July, early August. So it is a test to see which guys are able to kind of stick to it and to remain focused on the goal of making this team, making this roster. It's going to be interesting to see how some of these rookies handle it. I mean, this is their first mini camp. This is their first, you know, NFL season getting that under their belts. It's going to be, I think, a very productive mini camp for a lot of these guys. And look, there's a lot of weight on this rookie class right now in terms of expectations, just based off of what the rookie class the year prior did. So they're going to have to come out and perform well over the course of the next 3 days. I think they will. I think this rookie class has the potential to be maybe not as good as last year, because I feel like last year was one of the best rookie classes the Seahawks have had in franchise history, at least in terms of first-year production. I mean, obviously 2012, you're never going to match that. I think 2011 was another incredible class too. But in terms of just producing on the field the first season out of the gate, and we're going to be talking to one of those guys who was part of last year's draft class, Kobe Bryant, coming up around noon today. It's going to be vitally important for this rookie class to continue to perform to that level that last year's did if the Seahawks want to get back to that Super Bowl level.
Yeah, they're going to rely on some young guys. The rookie class last year, you got a bunch of starters there. You're going to get at least two starters out of this rookie class. I expect to see a couple more out there. But you're right, man. These rookies have a great opportunity in front of them. And I think that they know what that rookie class did last year. And I don't think they're going out there and saying, look, we got to be just like them. We have to do that. But no, they're like, look, we want to contribute as well. That's why you are here. Now, some guys who are here, who are showing up, who are going to be on the sidelines in their jerseys and shorts, no cleats on, they're not going to compete, are veterans Jamal Adams and Jordan Brooks. Now, I don't expect much out of these guys. Now it's mandatory camp, right? This is the camp that I wanted to see them at. I wanted to see how they interact with the players, the relationships they build with the coaches, and now they're getting mental rest. When you're as good as Jamal Adams, even though he has not been healthy, I understand that, if you're as good as Jordan Brooks, those mental reps are valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, George's not going to be running around. Jamal's not going to be running around. But you can still get better at understanding what this this organization needs out of you. And Pete talks about Jamal and Jordan in cut number two.
He sounds good. I talked to him just a couple of days ago. Mo Kelly went down and saw those guys yesterday and visited with him and Jordan. And everything's moving along. We don't have time frames. We won't really know for another good 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or something like that. You know, see how far they've come. But they're both. They got their eyes set on getting back and getting ready to go for the season. So whether they can make it, we'll find out.
So Bump, with Brooks and Adams in attendance for minicamp, I think a lot of people are kind of wondering, well, what's there for them to do? Because they're both injured, right? Like, is it just, are they here to rehab? Or what is the value in having them around this week in order to, get ready for training camp?
Well, they're still going to rehab, obviously. I don't know if they brought their team out here or not when it comes to their rehab. If not, you got great trainers here who are going to take care of you. So you're still getting right. When these guys are maybe doing special teams meetings or they're doing special teams walk through outside, they're getting their ice, their stem, and all the other stuff that encompasses getting ready for the season. So one, it's to get right. Two, it's just to be around the team now, to be in that meeting room and understand the identity of that room. You got some new guys. You talk about the linebacker room. You got Devin Bush in there, so it's important. You got Devin Bush and Bobby Wagner. Obviously, Jordan Brooks has a relationship with Bobby Wagner already, but it's important that you read the room and feel what is needed and how you kind of fall in place when it comes to helping your group out. You talk about Jamal Adams. I'm sure they separate the safeties from the corners, but then you do come together and you have Devin Witherspoon. You have Trey Brown coming back. You got Mike Jackson over there. So it's reconnecting with the guys, right? Because they don't hang out during the whole offseason. You have your pockets of guys who kick it or whatnot. But it's reconnecting, and then it's starting to understand what this team is going to look like, who is struggling with what, who needs help there. Now they are an extension of the coaching staff because they can't go out there. They can't perform. So the coaches are leaning on. They're like, look, we need your leadership. We need the knowledge that you provide to this room. And just get to know the team again. Get acclimated all over again. And there's some value to that. I know people want to see them out there running around. That's just not physically going to happen. But having them here is going to be huge for this team's mentality.
Yeah, and I mean, they're two veterans. They're two guys that have been in Seattle for multiple years now. I mean, that experience is going to be huge to, you know, guys who are new to Seattle, that are new to this Seahawks franchise, who have not, you know, familiarized themselves yet with how things operate around here. Obviously, you know, Jamal and Jordan know how this franchise operates, knows how this coaching staff coaches, and that's going to be valuable information for a lot of these young guys. And Bump, you've gone through mini camp a time or two in your playing day. What's the hardest part about it? Because it's 3 days, and people are kind of like, well, you know, it's a lot shorter than training camp. You know, how hard can 3 days of practice be? But, there's a reason why they do this, right? Like, it's not just to get the guys together one last time. Like, they're looking for stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's for these young guys, you got to crawl before you walk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the crawling stage. You know, the rookie minicamp was when your baby rolls over for the first time. Like, oh, look at that milestone. Holding his head up all by himself. Now it's time for these rookies to crawl. It's starting to understand how fast this game really is because, of course, when you're in rookie minicamp, you got guys flying around, but there's nothing like having a 3-, 4-, 5-, 6-year veteran out there competing with you as well. So understanding what the game is going to feel like. Obviously, they're not hitting each other or anything like that, but and it's still teaching these guys the culture as well. That's another reason why you want Jordan Brooks and Jamal Adams there, because they are the leaders of the culture. So understanding the culture, crawling before you walk. And then the hardest part, at least for me, was just getting your schedule down. Because when you're in college, you have class or whatnot. You don't have class. This is the first time you are playing football, and that is it. Some guys in college just play football, depending on what school you go to. You don't know what type of stuff they do. But I know at Washington State, I had to take my butt to class. So for a lot of these guys, it's learning how to be a pro, knowing when to wake up, when to get to the facility, when do you get your treatment, when are you going to eat, when do you watch film, when do you put in that extra work. That was probably the hardest part for me, because once you go and play football, man, you've done that your whole life. Either you got it or you don't. Either you're faster than that guy or you're not. And then understanding how you can use all your attributes to beat the guy in front of you, because he's here for a reason. This guy is a pro. So I would say that is the hardest part, learning the schedule, learning that playbook, and understanding that you have to work a little bit harder, unless you're one of the greats, to be successful on the football field. If there's something that you're looking at this mini camp, something that you want to see, what's that?
What I want to see is that defensive line really emerge. And I want to see some guys, you know, kind of stand out on that defensive line, because it feels like they've got a lot of pieces, but they don't have anybody right now that I think is like head and shoulders above. I want to see some guys kind of assert themselves on that D-line as the key guys that are going to be making stuff happen this season. Because last year, I think, was another year where it was just like, all right, we've got just a bunch of guys, but where is that guy going? Where's that alpha going to emerge? Where's that guy who's going to just be a huge presence every single time the ball is snapped? So I think the defensive line is where my eyes are going to go to over the course of the next 3 days.
All about the big boys in the trenches, man. We are live from minicamp. Having a good time. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
All right, Bump. I know this first headline was of big interest to you this morning. The PGA Tour and LIV Golf Tour announced that they are merging. What's the real headline?
Man, he's lost a lot of money, but congrats to Phil Mickelson for finally winning a bet.
He did it!
Him and Charles Barkley have lost the most money when it comes to gambling. And I look at this situation, and you know what I thought of? I thought, okay, the PGA, it's like Aldera Country Club, right? Very exclusive. And Live Tour is like Top Golf. You know what I'm saying? It's cool.
Yeah,
it's flashy. It's flashy. Loud. Yeah. And now they merge. This happened a lot faster than I thought it was going to happen. I thought the PGA would hold out 4 or 5 years maybe and see if Liv could survive. But obviously, Liv is doing something right. Phil Mickelson said that the culture of the PGA Tour was a manipulative and strong arm type of culture. Like, they force you to do things. They didn't take care of you. You mentioned earlier before the show, guys aren't salaried. And that's the main thing Liv did. Said, look, you don't even have to win. You just come over
here, we'll pay you.
Attract these eyes. We'll give you $200 million easy.
This reminds me, and I've seen the comparison made on social media today, of when Vince McMahon purchased WCW and the Monday Night Wars. You had WWE and WCW going head-to-head every single Monday night.
Right.
And then you saw Vince McMahon show up on Monday Nitro one time. And it's like, wait, why is he here? You're with the other guys. And then he's like, I own WCW now. And it's like, what? This was a plot twist I did not see coming this soon. It felt like LIV Golf Tour was just kind of this fledgling operation. Like, they had a very poor TV deal.
Right.
But it feels like the PGA Tour kind of sending them a life raft here. Also, that, I mean, morally, the whole, you know, sports washing and the money that the Saudi Arabian government is pumping into this, you know, that is, it's tough to kind of reconcile that. But, like, the PGA Tour tried to be this moral beacon, and then all of a sudden the Saudis are like, you need some cash? And they're like, all right, yeah, we'll buy. So, very odd today in the world of golf, but I would imagine this is going to make for a better golf product, right?
Yeah, and then you got Brooks Koepka, who won a major. He's a LIV Tour guy. What's that relationship like? And then you got guys like Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy who are coming out and saying, you know, you're a traitor if you go over to the LIV Tour. What you say now, Tiger? What you say now, Rory? Those are your boys now. So, interesting merger. Didn't think it was going to happen this soon, but it's probably good for baseball. I mean, baseball, golf. Keep everyone involved. I'm with it. I ain't mad at it.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Colts cornerback Isaiah Rodgers is being investigated by the NFL for possible violations of the league's gambling policy. What's the real headline?
Now, here's a gamble that did not pay off. Man, my man was tripping. So
he was placing a lot of bets.
Over like 100 bets. Most of those bets were between $25 and $50 range. There were some four-figure bets. He opened up a sportsbook account under a different name. And it's like, bro, you know you can't do this. And that's what baffles me because I was in the league 15 years ago, and they made sure we knew we couldn't even be in fantasy football leagues where you were getting money. It had to be just for the pride and love of the game. But these guys know, and I'm going to talk about it more in four-down territory about who's at fault. But it's amazing to me how, as of late, these guys have been getting caught up. And it's the younger guys, it seems like, who are just a few years in the league. They don't really understand what's going on. So the league has to look at how they're preparing these guys, but most importantly, the organizations have to look at how they're communicating what guys can or can't do. But he was going to be a starter this year as well. He just put himself in a horrible situation. A
couple things. I went back and looked at the tape of the end of the Texans-Colts game in Week 18 last year to see if he was involved in that 4th-and-20 play that ended in a touchdown. He was not.
Okay,
he was not on the field for that play. So he is not in trouble for that. But I wonder if there is a misunderstanding amongst players in states where it is legal to place wagers on games at casinos or via mobile apps or whatever, because there's a difference between it being legal in your state and also legal by your employer. Like,
right.
If your employer, the NFL, says you can't do this, then you can't do that. Like, I don't care if it's the law of the land, like, you are at risk of losing your job because the integrity of these games is at stake. So this is not the first time we have seen a player get popped for this just this offseason. The Lions had, what, 3 players? There were a couple other guys, Calvin Ridley, the most famous example, being suspended all of last season for this. So I don't think this is a problem that's going to go away with just suspending Isaiah Rodgers. I think, you know, he's probably not alone in this. I hope the NFL does a much better job than they have of educating these guys as to, look, like, just because it's legal in the state that you live in doesn't mean it's good in our eyes.
I think about the guy who's watching all these stories go down and who has placed bets and how shook they are. Better clean it up right now, man, because the NFL, they're all over it.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Mariners will try to right their ship tonight against the equally cold San Diego Padres. What's the real headline?
Curtis, are you ready for the battle of the disappointments? Because like it or not, someone has to win tonight, and hopefully
it
is the Mariners, man. They need this. They need this 2 games. The Padres have been a disappointment, just like the Mariners. They spent all that money. They got Juan Soto. They got Tatis over there. They invested in their organization, and they're not seeing the returns right now. And same thing with the Mariners. They invested not as much as the Padres invested. So for the Mariners to have a better record, I guess that's a win for them. I'm always looking for wins for this Mariner team. But we'll see how it goes tonight, man. You got 2 games in San Diego, and you need these desperately.
Need them. Gotta have them. There's really no other option, especially after the series that they had against Texas. You don't want to fall even further behind in the American League West. And look, the Padres are down right now. You got to take advantage, because we're going to talk about it in the following segment. The Mariners don't have many more opportunities against teams with losing records.
Nah, it's looking rough out there. Took a look at the schedule, and not a lot left. Like you mentioned, we'll talk about it later. But I wouldn't say this is like the Oakland A's, where you're expected to win.
No.
But you got to get these 2 games, man, because you don't see them again for a few months, I want to say, the Padres. And who knows what they're going to look like at that point of the year. So, come on, Mariners. Do what you got to do. Get this win. It starts tonight. First pitch is at 6:40. Hey, like we mentioned, the Mariners have some work to do when it comes to making the playoffs. We'll throw some scenarios out there next and talk through it. The Bump and Stacey Show. We got Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacey.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
The Mariners have put themselves in a bad position. You know, this is a team that entered the season with a lot of expectations. You got Julio with the big contract. Obviously, Castillo's coming back. Robbie Ray was healthy. Now he's out. And the supporting cast hasn't been supporting this team like we thought they would support them. And the playoffs don't look too great right now, Curtis Rogers. I read an article by our guy, Ryan Divish, and he kind of breaks it all down for you. He says, look, it's not impossible. The Mariners can still make the playoffs, but it's not likely. Let me run some numbers down for you. So the games against divisional opponents have been reduced from 19 to 13. So the Mariners losing 5 of 6 against the Rangers, they have to go 6-1 the rest of the year if there were a tiebreaker situation. If you want to win that, we know that's not looking too good. All right, there's only 35 games left against teams with losing records. As of today on their schedule with 103 remaining, and the Mariners are 10-20 against teams with winning records. As of today, all this is today, you know how the schedule goes. It's a fluid situation. Teams win and lose. Just looking at it in that, the last two numbers are what concern me the most, right? Only 35 games against teams with losing records, and the Mariners are 10-20 against teams with winning records. So there's not too many opportunities when we talk about games they should win, and they're not performing against teams that are considered above average and the elites.
Yeah, I mean, you throw those numbers out there, Bump, and those come from Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. Shout out to him. But, like, yeah, that does not make me feel rosy about their chances going forward. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, you can say, you know, hey, there's more than 100 games left. There's 103 games left. There's plenty of time to make it up this season for the Mariners. I mean, look, the Mariners last year were 29-39. You can say all those things, but the biggest difference to me between this year and last year is how competitive the American League has become. It's not just, you know, last year there was no middle class in the American League. It was the good teams. You had, what, the Astros and Yankees all winning above 100 games. You had Cleveland, Toronto, the Mariners. All those teams were in it as well. This year, you've got the entirety of the American League East is in playoff contention. You've got 4 of the 5 teams in the American League West still have a fighting chance. Like, that's 9 teams right there. the American League Central leader will have a postseason berth. They will host a playoff game. They'll likely host a wild card round because the American League Central is awful this season. But the American League is way deeper this year than it was a year ago. And so the Mariners aren't just fighting the Astros and Rangers right now. They're also fighting the five teams in the American League East and then also the team in the American League Central. Like, if the Mariners were in the American League East right now, they'd be in last place because they're under 500.
Yeah.
They have a lot of teams ahead of them right now in the playoff hunt, so you're not just going up against you and one opponent. No, you've got to make sure that all of these opponents that are ahead of you lose in this certain pattern so that you can leapfrog them. And like you said, the road that lies ahead for them, two-thirds of their remaining games are against winning teams.
Yeah, and you got to fight. And, you know, you need your boys with you. Right, Julio has been turning things around. Kelnick has been good this season. But in cut number four, Jason Churchill joined us yesterday. Talks about Teo and Gino. They need to get going.
But those two guys are the key to the rest of the Mariners season. It's not Julio. It's not Jared Kelnick. It's not the pitching staff. It's not a trade. You cannot fix this team with trades this season. Eugenio Suarez and Teoscar Hernandez have to do better. They have to be better. They have to be much closer to what they were a year ago from here on out for this offense to turn around and for the Mariners season to be meaningful. Those two guys are the key to it all.
Just like any sport, Rogers, you look at the supporting cast. And if the supporting cast is performing at a level they're supposed to be at or they exceed that expectation, typically your team is going to do good stuff. We look at the NBA Finals. You got the Miami Heat. You lose game one, the supporting cast was garbage. Game two, you get three or four guys dropping 20 points, and then you get about 30 points from the bench. They need the supporting cast to get going. And if they don't get going, that means you need Julio Rodriguez and the guys who have been performing to play out of their minds. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's fair to ask that of them. Now, it's probably fair to most fans, to ask Julio just to be astronomically better than what he is now because you're paying him the big dollars. But this is a team sport.
It is. It is going to be imperative that the bats you were counting on to lead you this season do just that
right.
The remainder of the season. Again, there's 103 games left, so there's time for these bats to get going. And the importance of this portion of the season and the months of May and April is that it's important to bank wins so you give yourself a much less stressful time in the months of August and September trying to get a playoff berth. Teams like the Rangers, teams like the Yankees, teams like the Rays, they're not going to be sweating it out so much in July and August around the trade deadline. I'm sure they're going to make moves in order to improve their chances. But teams like the Mariners, teams like the Blue Jays, like the Red Sox, all those teams that are not quite secure in their future in the 2023 season, They're going to have to be aggressive if they want to make the postseason. They're going to have to make big moves. And it's unfortunate that they've kind of put themselves in that spot because had they aced this offseason, they wouldn't be in this position where they might have to dip into the farm system again and give an impressive package of prospects in order to get one of the bigger names available in a trade or, take a flyer on somebody like Tim Anderson from Chicago, or Jonathan India from Cincinnati. Those are a couple names in terms of like middle infield help that could potentially be available in a trade here over the next couple months. But this portion of the year, you have to bank wins in order to make it easier on yourself later on the year, and the Mariners just haven't done that.
The only reason why I never really liked the argument that it's early was because if you get off to a good start early, if you hit a bump in the road or a couple slants at this time of the year, you'll be fine. You know what the Rangers did? They got off to a nice early start. What do they have, a 9.5, 10-game lead over the Mariners right now? So, yes, we're looking at hindsight's always 20/20. We would love for them to get off to a good start, but they didn't do that. So now they are where they are. How do they get out of this? I asked Churchill yesterday. I go, man, is it as easy as changing your approach in midseason like they do in football and basketball and tweaking some things? He says, hold on, Bump, it ain't that easy here in cut number three.
these are things that take time. This is something I talked about on baseball things quite a bit. Like, things in baseball take time. Like, this isn't a halftime adjustment. It takes time for a player to identify an adjustment that will work for him and then put it in play in games. It takes time for a pitcher to change his mechanics or change the way he's throwing a pitch or change his approach to attacking hitters with runners on base, for example. It takes time, and it's not 2 games or 5 games or 10 games. It may not even be 20 or 25 or 30 games.
Takes time. It's a process. That's why you play 162 of these things, because you want to weed out the weak. That's what I appreciate about baseball, is that, one, it's easier on the body, so you can play 162 games. But when you play 162, no one's sneaking into the playoffs.
No.
Right? The better teams are in it. So it's for them to make that push, they got to go for a run right now.
They really do. Like, this is the absolute last second that you can afford to, you know, waste. You got to go now. Like, you can't wait until the end of June, like last year, where they won 14 in a row. If you, you know, don't take advantage of this opportunity against the Padres this weekend, it's gonna start sliding on you real fast.
All right, well, starts tonight. Let's take care of these Padres. Now, the Seahawks know who their starting quarterback is. But what does 2023 look like for Drew Lock? We'll tell you next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Day two of the Dad Show before Curtis gets out of here and adds a member to his team.
Yeah, we're in a player acquisition mode right now.
Gonna acquire a player. Did a good scouting report on her, and she'll fit in perfectly.
We've scouted her for 9+ months.
There we go.
And she'll be here hopefully tomorrow. That's the goal.
So one more day of the Dad Show, and then Stacy comes back. But let's talk about the Seahawks and Drew Lock. Now, last year at this time, it was a competition, or at least we thought it was a competition at the quarterback spot, right? Who is it going to be?
Stacy didn't think it was a competition.
Stacy didn't think it was.
She nailed it right off the bat.
She said it was Geno.
It was Geno all along.
But I got to humble her, too, because she said it was Geno, but she thought that Drew would eventually get a shot.
That's true.
During the regular season.
That's
so true. Stacy, congratulations on your success. I know. But we got to humble you sometimes. And Drew Lock was in that competition. And then you get to the preseason. And obviously, Geno's getting all the snaps with the starters, and then there's an opportunity for Drew Lock to play the majority, if not the whole game. I want to say it was the third preseason game, and he comes down with COVID. He doesn't get that opportunity to go out there and compete. But even at that point, you felt like the Seahawks knew who their guy was going to be. So you go through this whole season. Geno has a Pro Bowl season, puts up some great numbers, and during the offseason, get some coaches leaves. Canales is gone. He goes to Tampa Bay. And we're thinking, okay, what is the future for Drew Lock? Is he going to stick around here and be a backup quarterback, or is he going to test out free agency and see what's out there for him? I think he tested it out and didn't want to go anywhere, didn't like any of the situations, so he signs with the Seahawks again. Now, if I'm Drew Lock, I'm looking at 2023, and this is the way you have to look at it. Or to have another opportunity to learn under Geno, a guy who's been in a position that he's in right now, being a backup quarterback. First you get drafted, you get your opportunities, you go somewhere else, and then just continuing to look at defenses and make yourself better when it comes to recognizing things. Drew Lock has to come out during this mini camp and during training camp and look like a professional football player, look like he's gotten better at his reads, look like his mechanics are more on point. He's not your typical backup quarterback, because I think that he's going to get another opportunity to be a starter in this league. So I don't think anyone is doing this when it comes to this minicamp, or especially if you're a veteran. No one's mailing it in and saying, oh, I'm just going to go through the motions and see what happens. I think for Drew Lock, he has to treat this as if he is a starter. And now if I'm a backup, I'm a 2, I'm a 3, I'm a guy who's trying to get on this roster offensively, I'm working with Drew. I've been in that position. I've gotten reps with Charlie Fry and Seneca Wallace.
Charlie Fry, Charlie Freezy,
Big Hoss. And we will go out and be like, all right, man, we're fighting to make this roster, right? We're the 2s. We have to make sure that we're on point. So I think this mini camp and training camp is going to be a bit more intense for Drew Lock than people realize.
I think so. And I think Drew Lock would not have returned here if there wasn't a desire from this Seahawks front office to bring him back. Because, look, he was part of the Russell Wilson trade. And he'll always carry that with him so long as he's a Seahawk. And I don't think you make it a point to include him in that trade if you don't have some kind of plan for him. Now, obviously, Geno is your starter. He was your starter last season, beat out Drew Lock in the preseason and all throughout training camp and whatnot. But I think the Seahawks do have a plan for Drew Lock. What is that plan? Who's to say? Because Geno's your starter, at least for this upcoming season. But beyond that, who knows? And it's funny to me because like Pete Carroll and John Schneider love themselves some backup quarterbacks, especially backup quarterbacks who are here for like multiple seasons. Like they love Tavares Jackson.
Right.
They loved Geno when he was the backup. Like Pete made a point after the Russell Wilson trade when Geno was still a free agent saying, like, we'd love to have him back. And then John Schneider speaks very highly of Drew Lock. I know Pete speaks very highly of Drew Lock whenever given the opportunity. I think Drew Lock is, he's a pretty likable dude. He seems like he gets along well with just about everybody in the locker room. So, I mean, I think there is a plan for him at some point here, whether or not, you know, he's got the patience to wait it out, sit behind Geno, continue to get those reps and whatnot. I mean, you can see it. There are times on the football field where Drew Lock makes plays, and it's like, wow, I can see why he was a high second-round pick. Why the Broncos thought so highly of him that, you know, they named him their starting quarterback in his second season. Why he was a threat to Geno last season to take over the starting quarterback job. He's a interesting piece to have on your team. And I think it's good that the Seahawks have a capable backup in Drew Lock in case something were to happen to Geno. That was not always the case when Russell Wilson was here, mm-hmm. because there were some years where, Russ was, you know, obviously the starter, but the backup was like Trevon Boykin, who, I mean, had a good college career, but you could tell was not, you know, a pro quarterback. Whereas here, I think it's great to have a solid backup quarterback, you know, in case something were to happen to your starter, you don't feel like the entire, you know, wagon is going to fall apart. So I like that the Seahawks have made investments in the backup quarterback spot here over the last couple of years, whether it be Geno, whether it be Drew Lock, because overall, like it leaves you with less, you know, chance of the bottom falling out if something were to happen to your starter.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Drew Lock too. You mentioned it. The dude can throw the football. I mean, he is athletic. He's probably one of the more athletic dudes on the team. We talk about his golf game. We talk about basketball. But in 2019, he did go 4-1 in 5 starts. And then he gets a new offensive coordinator. He goes 4-9. And I believe he got one more offensive coordinator. He goes 0-3. And then Teddy Bridgewater takes over there. It's not identical as a starter. He's 8-13. It sounds familiar to Geno in his situation over there. So if there's anybody who can teach Drew Lock how to overcome and how to persevere, it has to be the guy who waited 7-8 years in between being a starter the first mm-hmm. time and come around the second time. Now, I don't think it's going to be the case with Drew Lock. And I would prefer to have a backup quarterback here who understands how things operate. There's nothing like having a guy who knows the offense already, second year under this offense, who has a relationship with Shane Waldron and these guys on the offense. Now it's about Drew Lock. He's got to go out there and put together a preseason. I want to see Drew Lock go out there and tear it up this preseason, man, because he's a good ball player. And I think that once he gets another chance in this league, he could do something that is impressive. So Drew Lock 2023, this is not a kickback year. It never is in the NFL. But for him, he's going to go out there and show this organization in the NFL that he can play in this league and he's good to go. I mean, coaches are constantly evaluating players and improving their roster. So it's important that guys leave great impressions on Pete and the rest of the coaches. Who are these guys? We'll let you know next.